With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Cinematic Universe, a podcast that's all about comic book movies, which you can find at cinematicuniverse.com. I'm Seb Patrick.
And I'm James Hunt.
And we'll be bringing you a truncated edition of the show to bridge the gap between our Justice League and Sky High episodes. And on this slightly format-breaking minisode, basically to give Joe a bit of a chance to actually sit down and breathe and read some comics due to his insane schedule with his new job, we're going to be giving you a run-through of the latest comic book movie and TV news, and we're also going to give a bit of time over to discussing some pretty major recent developments in the world of comics themselves, because I think it's, you know, we talk about comics on the podcast anyway, but I think they're also things that, that could have an important effect on the comics, multimedia, movie world.
It's safe to say some of these definitely will.
Yeah. So I don't know if this will be the only time we do a news roundup like this, or if it might become a more regular thing that you have some non-Joe mini episodes. We'll just see how it goes. But let's crack on with what's been making the headlines in the comic book movie world
over the last several months. So I think the biggest piece of news that we've not talked about on the podcast is that Jude Law has been cast in Captain Marvel and is playing the sort of, I was going to say human incarnation. I mean, he's going to be playing Captain Marvel, the original Captain Marvel at Marvel.
Yeah. I mean, we just talked about this a little bit off mic. I'm not certain what the, whether he has actually been confirmed as Marvel or if it's just something that's being largely assumed. What's the credentials for saying that he is actually Marvel?
I mean, I've seen a little casting snippet which says his name is Walter Lawson or whatever, and that he's going to be the
right.
Yeah, the secret identity of Captain Marvel on Earth.
I mean, the thing that I think's best about this that I saw someone point out is that the Marvel Cinematic Universe has now got two screen incarnations of Holmes and Watson. So that's pretty good going.
Yeah, it would be good to get all those characters on screen in some contrived manner.
I don't think we will, though, because isn't Captain Marvel supposed to be set in the 90s, isn't it?
Yeah, like, so I kind of suspect she's going to turn up in Avengers Infinity War, and then they'll do an origin story in between the two Avengers movie or something.
And it seems kind of likely that that origin story will probably involve Marvel being Captain Marvel, maybe in the 90s, and at some point probably dying and passing on his power to Carol Danvers.
I mean, she got her powers as part of like an accident involving the original Captain Marvel, so it's pretty, I mean, we don't know how close they're going to stick to the comics, but you could safely bet that Jude Law will not be alive by the end of this movie.
Yeah, I mean, he is a character that almost as much as, well, I was going to say Bucky, Jason Todd. almost as much as Uncle Ben, he is defined by being dead. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Although, I mean, he didn't die in the Carol Danvers version of the origin story.
No, he died in the Death of Captain Marvel story. It's just that, I mean, it's funny actually that doesn't get, you know, there is this running thing about, oh, there's certain characters that always stay dead in comics and gradually they've disappeared down the years. But given when Death of Captain Marvel was, and given that it was certainly before Jason Todd, I don't think it was before Gwen Stacy, I'm surprised that Captain Marvel isn't on that list, because has he come back?
He's the kind of character who comes back in very cheating ways. Like he's never come back to life.
Like he's never properly been the current Captain Marvel since.
But
dying,
like versions of him have come back. Like when Secret Invasion happened, I think there was a Skrull version of him around, who had his own series for a while. And for a while, there was a time displaced version of him who was brought back, brought forward from before his death. So I mean, they generally do it. What they used to do was every 2 years they had to publish a comic called Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
So that they could retain the rights to the trademark.
Because, if they lost that trademark, DC would be able to publish it. Actually, I don't know if DC would be able to. It's just that Marvel wouldn't be able to. I can't imagine... If the trademark on that name specifically lapsed, I still don't think DC could put the word Marvel in front of a comic without Marvel challenging it.
No, quite. I mean, they seem to have accepted that now, at least.
Yeah.
But yeah, so for a while, there were lots of miniseries. Like, ever since I started reading comics, every 5 or 6 years, there would be a random Captain Marvel series.
Yeah, so this is... And Jude Law. I mean, who doesn't like Jude Law? I think that's a... It's an interesting piece of casting. I mean, he has wanted to be in a superhero movie for so long. And it's kind of surprising that it's taken this long. But I think it's probably good for him that he's sort of... Because he's past the point where he would have got to be cast as a lead in one of these. So for him to have found a role that he can actually do... Because, I mean, he was originally going to be... He was going to be Ozymandias in, I think, was it either the Paul Greengrass or the Darren Aronofsky Watchmen? And he was linked with Superman for a good long while in the early 2000s as well. And, like, by all accounts, I think he is a proper comic book fan. So, you know, it's nice to see him get one of these jobs, finally.
Is he... he's not problematic in any way yet, is he?
I don't think so, no. That's
good to know.
I don't know if he might have been cheating on someone he was famously with in the past. I can't remember. I mean, mixing that up with somebody else. But by current standards, that doesn't seem too bad. I could be wrong. Tell us if we're wrong and it turns out that Jude Law is actually a shitbag. But yeah, so Captain Marvel, a movie that is still happening, although it's easy to forget that that's happening because it's so far off in the slate. And
yeah, I mean, it's got to start filming within a year, hasn't it?
Yeah,
really. So,
and it will be really disappointing if we don't get her in Infinity War. So, yeah, we'll just wait and see.
Okay. So from one movie that they're trying not to make happen to a movie that still I don't think is going to happen. Gambit has two pieces of news.
And I do believe Gambit's going to happen because of the Gore Verbinski Negasonic Teenage Warhead amazing factoid. Go back and listen to... I can't even remember what episode it was. Was it Incredibles?
Yeah.
It was Incredibles, yeah, where we discovered that one. So,
yeah, so
it's going to happen.
Gambit, Gambit has a production date for February 2018. And they've also cast Lizzie Caplan as the female lead in it.
Okay. Which, yeah, I mean... I don't know who she's playing. I assume you'll explain that in a minute.
Well, we'll see.
But I do like Lizzie Caplan. I think she's really good. She's one of those people who, when she like, I can't recall what I've seen that she would have been the lead in. I know she was the lead in Masters of Sex, but I haven't watched that. But she's turned up in films like Mean Girls and Cloverfield, and when she turns up in things, she's usually one of the better people in them. But no, I think she's pretty cool and a good actress. So that's, you know, positive check mark in the Gambit column.
I mean, it's not going to be hard to be the best thing in Gambit, is it?
Are you dissing Channing Tatum?
I'm not
Joe
dissing Channing Tatum. I think he's got his strengths,
up for it.
And I don't think a French thief is going to be one of them.
No, Channing. I mean, I think I've said this before, but Channing Tatum should be playing Shazam. That is absolutely who Channing Tatum should be. 100%.
Like, the child idea of what the perfect grown-up looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. So who... Like, we don't know anything about who Lizzie Caplan is going to be playing.
Do we have a name, or is it literally... They haven't even gone that far.
We have nothing, as far as I'm aware.
Okay, so James, bring us your expert Gambit knowledge and tell us some potential female love interests for Gambit.
Okay.
Don't say Rogue.
Well, this is the thing, right? As soon as I saw a picture of Lizzie Caplan, I was like, wow, she would be
an amazing rogue, yeah. Actually. Yeah.
Like, and Anna Paquin's got her fans, I'm sure. Like, I was never that keen on the choice in the first place, and she plays a different, you know, the version of the character in the movies is very different to the version in the comics. So if they wanted to recast Rogue and go with a more comics friendly version, Lizzie Caplan would be a great choice for it. However, I think if they were doing that, they would make a bigger deal out of it, and I'm not entirely certain they would start recasting chunks of the franchise while it was still sort of mineable. So, I mean, the other obvious choice for a sort of female Gambit lead is Belladonna, who, if you don't know Gambit's comics mythology...
We can assume that a lot of people don't know Gambit's comics mythology, because didn't almost all of it happen in the 90s?
Yeah, and it's all quite bad. So, he is sort of a wayward member of a guild of thieves from New Orleans. And Belladonna is his sometime love interest from the Assassin's Guild. And, you know, they were sort of betrothed as children, but Gambit ran out on the sort of union. And so, you know, it kind of plunged the two guilds into even more bitter rivalry. And
This is kind of like a reverse West Side Story.
I mean, I think it's supposed to be a Romeo and Juliet thing, but frankly, yeah. I am terrified they're going to use this as the basis for the Gambit film, because all that stuff is, like, there's never been a good comic about it. It's just flatly tedious bullshit that takes this kind of, you know, mysterious, suave thief, sort of lady-killing thief, and makes him into this kind of sort of turgid, baggage-laden... just waste of time.
To do a bit of Joe style devil's advocacy here, after what we talked about in the last episode about it being pretty great that Fox are looking to sort of do lots of different genre things with the various X properties, might it not be a good thing if their Gambit film is a romantic melodrama?
I mean, the tone I would be looking for a Gambit movie is kind of...
a heist movie.
Yeah, well, maybe not even a heist movie. Like, I would not be I would not be upset if it was, like, along the lines of Romancing the Stone. Like, that kind of mismatched thing where they're on, like, a sort of quest or something. You know, I can see that working within the context of here's a guy who has to steal some stuff.
Do you know what's really weird and really easy to forget when it comes to Gambit?
Go on.
There's already been a Gambit
right?
in this universe and these films.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I don't know if they're just going to do a Deadpool and go down the direction of completely ignoring... I mean, there is precedent for completely ignoring Origins and just doing what you want to do with them afresh. Or I wonder, is Channing Tatum going to be playing an evolution of the Taylor Kitsch version of the character? Because as I say, it's like I literally only just remembered a couple of minutes ago, oh yeah, there was previously a Gambit in these movies.
I severely doubt there will be any reference to those films. I think they're going to do what they did with, like, Nightcrawler and Angel and Jubilee, and just be like, here's the same character, different context.
I mean, they have that excuse. The timeline's been rewritten a couple of times
yeah,
now.
Yeah, so exactly.
They really can do what they want with that.
Yep. Psylocke as well. They did it with Psylocke.
Yeah.
Like, same character, completely different context, zero continuity, and it doesn't even... there's no way you can reconcile it. Because, you know, why is Psylocke 20 years younger in X-Men Apocalypse? Why isn't there, like, a 20-year gap? Whatever, like, how does that character appear in both time periods looking the same?
Because they wanted to put Olivia
Yeah, exactly, in because they... yeah, quite. So, yeah. I'm not saying the Gambit movie would definitely be bad. I'm saying it definitely just won't happen.
I think it's going to happen.
It looks, at this point, it looks more like it will happen than any other previous time in the podcast. Because I remember... when Joe thought it was going to happen in 2016. Even at the end of 2015.
Wow, that's how long we've been talking about Gambit. Yeah,
even at the end of 2015, Joe did his box office predictions for 2016. And I was like, you know, Gambit's not coming out, right? And he put it on his list. And it, yeah.
When that film does come out, we will have to make a special trip. We'll have to all go to the same cinema.
Let's see if we can hire a cinema.
Which we haven't done since Batman v Superman. But we will have to actually go and see that all that together.
I think we should see if we can hire a cinema and put on a fan screening of it.
Yeah, double bill it with Howard the Duck.
Okay, next news item. In the last month, we've had both Runaways and Punisher airing on TV, so I thought we should maybe just mention those quickly.
Runaways kind of snuck out. I mean, actually, you said because Gifted's been on as well. I don't know if you want to touch on that. I know you, because I imagine you're watching it because it's the show you really wanted to have happen.
I mean,
but Runaways, like, there was so much hype about that happening, and then I saw kind of mentioned that it had started, but it felt like it snuck out.
In fact, it hasn't just started. They released 3 episodes in one go.
Oh, right.
So, it's a significant part of the way through its run.
Sorry, yeah, I jumped away from you saying whether or not you were watching The Gifted there.
Yeah, sorry. I watched the first episode and it was so generic.
Did it have sentinels in it?
I mean, it had robots.
Would they have counted as sentinels? So you didn't carry on watching it even though it had sentinels in it? Because I feel... I feel like you should carry on watching it if it's
well,
got
one
sentinels
of the,
in it,
one
James.
Of the reasons,
that was your criteria.
One of the reasons I didn't watch it is because Polaris didn't have green hair. And apparently they've changed that later on. Like, she does now.
Well, there you go. Jump back on.
Yeah. But there was a thing that there were sort of 5 X-Men characters in it and I couldn't tell them apart, even though some of them were different genders even. Like, they just all sort of dressed in black and had dark hair and grubby faces.
We are kind of at this point now where, like, now I'm not going to say there are too many superhero TV shows because I don't mean it in that way. I don't mean it in the way of there are too many and they should stop doing them. I mean it in the sense of there are too many for anyone to keep up with.
Yeah, sure.
Like, even if, and I long ago stopped being the kind of person who would try and watch all of them, and I think you probably did as well.
Yep.
But there are people who do that. And I can't imagine now, unless you really have no time on your, like, no time to do anything else, like, you can't keep up with every TV show that's based on a comic anymore.
Off the top of my head, 4 Flareverse shows with a 5th coming that's not in the Flareverse, but Black Lightning's coming. 2 X-Men TV shows. American Gods, Lucifer.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't count American Gods, but basically, yeah.
Right, yeah.
Preacher.
Preacher, yeah.
The Tick. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Gotham.
Yeah, all of the Netflix
ones.
And
then, how many Netflix are we... I mean, okay, they're not running concurrently.
I mean, there are 6 Netflix properties at the moment.
Yeah, Riverdale.
Riverdale, yeah.
Riverdale Sabrina spin-off coming soon. It's, you know, I mean, it's as I say, I don't think we're at a point where... There are some people who will be annoyed by there being that many. I don't think we're at a point where you'd quite hit fatigue with them yet. But,
Walking Dead and its spin-off.
Yeah, of course. Only the most popular TV show in America still. But yeah, so it's... I sometimes feel like I should be watching more of them than I am.
I mean, I would be
watching...
If
nothing else, so that we can talk about them on here. But
I would be watching more of them if they were better.
Well, that's the thing.
Most of them are quite bad. I mean, I generally feel like all of the teen superhero shows... None of them, they're all trying to do what Buffy did, and not as well. Gotham, we forgot Gotham. And the
I said Gotham.
Krypton,
yeah.
We forgot the fourth coming.
Of course,
Krypton's
on the way. But yeah, so I do feel bad that I dropped off, Flash and Supergirl, which were both doing stuff that I liked, but I think it's just the length of season and the length of episode.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm the kind of person who, if I fall one or two behind on something, I'm just never going to get caught up. Mm-hmm. So,
And I mean, just to swing it back around to what we were originally talking about.
Yes, sorry, yeah, that just went off on a bit of a sad tangent.
I've watched, I think, 8 episodes of The Punisher now.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm really trying, but there's a lot of it.
Yeah.
And it's all out in a short space of time. For what it's worth, I think it's probably, so far, like, with the caveat that I haven't seen to the end, I think it's probably in the top three Netflix series, depending on how you feel about Jessica Jones. For me, it's the second best after the first Daredevil season.
I've seen people expressing concern about its politics, but you're always going to get that with The Punisher.
Well, that's the problem.
I think, you know, that aside, it's really hard to get The Punisher wrong, I think. I mean, just look at the flipping Tom Jane movie, which is an objectively bad movie on so many levels, but we still enjoyed it. And it's like, you know, I think...
I mean, I think...
I don't think you have to work hard to do an entertaining Frank Castle, even if you do have to work hard for it to be politically
He just has to be like the ultra straight man in a world gone completely mad.
Yeah.
And like, there's a real appeal in the simplicity of, I've seen a problem, so I'm going to shoot it until it's fixed. Mm. Sorry, I should say, when I say it's my second, I think it's the second best, I mean that in terms of the quality of the storytelling. Like, my problem with the Punisher series so far is that I'm not getting any, like, fanboy thrills out of it. Mm. Like, it's like they've taken the concept and gone, okay, we've got this story we want to tell about, like, PTSD, and here it is. And it just happens to be a Punisher series because they had the license. I am enjoying it. And I think it's the only one, the only Netflix series since Daredevil season one that hasn't had me like hanging my head in my hands from just sort of stupid logic leaps and bad scripts writing. So on that level, I think I can recommend it. Whether it's actually going to excite superhero fans is another matter.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
And Runaways?
Runaways I've not seen, but I hear that it's a very close retelling. It's an expanded retelling of the Brian K. Vaughan series, and he's on it as a producer or something, or maybe not a producer, maybe like an advisor or something.
I mean, that sounds like something that I assume Runaways fans would be happy with.
Yeah, yeah.
Which makes me sound really distant from Runaways fans, like it's this thing that I have no interest in. Like, I've read the comic, it's pretty good, but...
Yeah, the thing is, I think the comic, like, when it came out, had a massive following of people who sort of... It was... When I read it, it was, like, a very competent, well-written comic about, you know, superhero kids or whatever, and it was, like... If I'd never read that, I would have been excited. As it was, I was just like, oh yeah, here's, you know, the latest version of Generation X / New Mutants / Teen Titans.
Mm.
So I think it found its niche, but even though I read it, I wasn't in the audience for it. So I don't have any great sentimental attachment to it.
Yeah. I wonder if they're going to do... what they did with killing off a certain beloved character.
Well, that's one of the few changes they've made is to that character, in that they've cast someone with a very different body type to the comics version.
Oh, have they?
Yeah, which is upsetting people justifiably, because, you know,
yeah,
it's not often you get a fat person in a comic who isn't evil.
Yeah.
So.
Have they got the dinosaur?
Surprisingly, yes.
Oh, they have, yeah. Just Googling this and just looking, they have got old lace. Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I wasn't going to check it out because I'm not... Cloak and Dagger's coming as well, actually. Just remembered. Yeah, I wasn't going to check Runaways out because, you know, I'm not super interested in it, but the good word of mouth has made me think, oh, I'll give it a look.
Yeah. So that's an update on TV that we're not watching, but one TV that you are watching.
I am watching The Punisher, to be fair. do we want to talk about the Justice League fallout briefly?
Yeah, go on then.
Yeah.
So Justice League has opened. I mean, it had opened by the time we did our podcast.
By this point, hopefully it won't have closed.
That's not necessarily a given. I mean, DC have resorted to putting out new posters with the words "now playing" on it. Now, obviously, there's another notable thing about those new posters, but it was the "now playing" thing that really struck me.
Yeah, like,
they're having to say to people, "Hey guys, we're still here," because it's... I mean, it you know, it was always going to be when you come out of the film, it was always going to be the case that it would be a film that really would not stick in people's memories, but it is not sticking in the pop cultural memory. I mean, at least what you could say for... I mean, again, we keep comparing it to Batman v Superman, but Batman v Superman was such a fascinating mess that people could not stop talking about it for weeks afterwards. Yeah. Even if all they were saying was laughing at Martha and the jar of piss. Like, they were talking about it.
Yeah, so far, but Justice League is currently less popular than CGI Superman moustache. Like, yeah. that's what the film has been reduced to, is one screenshot on Twitter.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, it's just, I mean, it won't have, it's not like it's going to have ended up losing money at the box office.
But you say that. Like,
no, it's not going to end its run having made less than $300 million. It'll hit the Amazing Spider-Man mark.
300, well, remember, 300 is the production budget, then you've got the marketing on top of it. Yeah. It's going to, like, a film like Justice League, I think, would be typically expected to double its budget to break even.
Mm.
And it's not going to get anywhere near that, surely. Maybe worldwide it might.
I think worldwide it'll hit seven, at least. Yeah. But the point is, the fact that we're even talking about it in those terms, you know, for it, especially for it to make less than Wonder Woman, is remarkable. But also, yeah, I mean, the stuff that's kind of coming out afterwards, as I say, you know, with these posters, they've now admitted that Superman is in the movie. And it's just the most staggering, like, we've talked about it before, how awful a marketing thing it was to pretend that Superman wasn't in the film.
Yeah, as someone on Twitter put it, to pretend that the third most popular fictional character in the world is not in your film.
Yeah. So you have got a symbol that is one of the most recognisable symbols on Earth, mm-hmm. behind the McDonald's arches and Mickey Mouse ears. And you keep that off. Actually, no, they did keep the symbol on the posters because they kept it in the You Can't Save the World Alone text. So they did keep the Superman S. But the point is, they keep Superman off these posters. The film comes out. Everyone goes, oh, Superman was really good in Justice League. Like, in anywhere where I've seen people talking positively about Justice League and not Wonder Woman, has pretty much been people going, oh, and they got Superman right for a few minutes. That was nice, wasn't it? And so now they've gone, oh, we should probably tell people that a nice, happy, shiny, brightly coloured Superman is in this movie. So let's reissue these posters with him added in. And it, you know, if that poster had been out before the film came out, it would have increased my interest in the film because I would have gone, oh, wow, they've brightened up Superman's costume for this film and he actually looks like Superman. That's slightly increased my interest in seeing it.
I think I said this on the Justice League podcast, but I always go to, like, my parents, as in, if my parents saw the Justice League poster, would they know what they were looking at? And the answer is no. Whereas if they saw it with Superman on, they'd be like, oh, it's a Batman and Superman film.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of audience that you have to ultimately get into your films to really sell them. Like, otherwise you're just playing to the Doctor Strange audience of nerds who will watch anything nerdy.
Yeah. So it's basically not been much of a success. It certainly hasn't had a critical hammering, and I think it's even had some reasonably positive reviews. I mean, let's not go into all the stuff about Rotten Tomatoes again.
Yeah, I mean, after the first wave of people saw it, I think the lower expectations definitely helped.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people came out going like, oh, actually, that was quite okay. isn't what you're aiming for.
No.
But, you know.
And so a predominant reaction has been from the Zack Snyder fan base, who are now convinced that this was going to be the greatest superhero movie of all time until Warners and Joss Whedon stepped in to tear it to pieces and ruin it. This goes against the prevailing popular view, which is that Joss Whedon came in and polished a turd with moderately successful results. Yeah. So, so there's been, I'm sure you'll have all seen, there's been this petition to get Warners to release the Zack Snyder cut. Which I imagine would have just been about 40 minutes of racists kicking over a vegetable stand.
I might go and sign that petition, actually, because I kind of I do want to see it, right?
I mean, from a film history point of view, it would be interesting to see the version that we didn't get. Yeah, just as with anything, it's always interesting to know about the versions that we didn't get.
This is the thing, though, right? because that film manifestly doesn't exist. Because, yeah. No, like, you can't make a superhero film these days without having reshoots at the end. Like, the only time that's been done, apparently, was Wonder Woman. And that was because it was a very sort of tight, cheap production with a singular vision at the heart of it. Whereas we know that Zack Snyder has a lot of back and forth with studios on all of his movies.
Mm.
And so, like, best case scenario, there's going to be an assembly cut of stuff that would have been reshot. So there, it's not like there's a Zack Snyder finished version of Justice League that they can release. Like, the best you can get is maybe he could go and cut together his, like, first assembly cut with Joss Whedon's reshoots to make some similar version.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
...of what he made, would have made. Like, there's this kind of crazy conspiracy that the Zack Snyder cut exists and is being withheld.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't. Like, that's not how movies work.
Hmm. I like that. So one of the people who's spoken out is Zack Snyder's son, Jet.
That's a Scientology name, isn't
Jet.
It?
Jet. Yeah.
Is Snyder a Scientologist?
I don't know, but he's an objectivist.
Mm. Oh dear.
That's
almost as bad.
Well, I mean, it explains so much about his work. When he, I think it was our former guest and friend Andrew Ellard who said on Twitter that, like, almost all of Zack Snyder's superhero stuff is about the idea that teaming up doesn't actually work.
I mean, that's what Justice League's about, right? Man, he should make the Mr. A movie.
But yeah, so Jet says, on a more serious note, I did enjoy the movie, although it's clearly not what it could have been due to the meddling of Warner Brothers and the forced comedy. The runtime was my biggest gripe with the movie, with events that should take a long time over in a flash. Now, there is one sense in which I agree with him, and we talked about it on our spoilery episode, which is that when you get to the end of the film, you're like, shouldn't there have been something else happening here?
Mm-hmm.
But equally, you know that what he means by that is that Zack Snyder would have had a big slow motion CGI battle scene that would have lasted for an hour. So,
events that should take a long time over in a flash. Yeah, it's like, what should take a long time? Like kicking over a fruit stand, for example.
But I do find it interesting as well that the report that I've clicked through to find this is a report on a website called MovieWeb, and it leads into this quote by saying, though Jet enjoyed the movie, it seems he feels Warner Brothers were the ones responsible for the forced comedy that has been so thoroughly criticised. who's thoroughly criticised it. Most people I've seen have said it's the comedy bits that have actually saved it from being a relentlessly grim affair. You know, when we were talking about how bad Aquaman is generally, and then he has one funny bit that was obviously a Joss Whedon addition.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that everything that's a joke succeeds, and I think there are definitely moments where it tries to be funny and doesn't succeed.
Affleck's Batman cannot deliver a joke.
Yeah. But there are as many moments where the levity absolutely,
means that at least you've got something to enjoy in a scene.
Yeah. But anyway, we don't need to keep reviewing it. It's just, you know, this is the sort of, this is what's been going on since it came out. Basically, everyone has kind of gone, yeah, that didn't really work, but everyone's got different reasons as to why they think it didn't really work. and the main thing is that we have, you know, beyond the fact that there are, Aquaman movie actively being made, a Cyborg movie purportedly being made, and a Flash movie purportedly being made, and obviously Wonder Woman 2. No one's really got any idea what's happening next with Justice League itself, and whether that concept is going to be carried on at all.
Yeah, I think it'll be a while before they do a Justice League sequel.
Yeah.
I would say 2020 earliest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so we've stabbed that corpse enough times. Let's carry on with the movie news. Just quickly, James Franco is making is apparently cast as Madrox in a Madrox movie. We talked a little about this at the start of the Justice League podcast.
We did,
yeah. Yes. So I don't really want to go into too much detail, except to say that the Madrox comics, specifically the miniseries and then the volume of X Factor which followed it up, are really good, and I have no strong opinions about James Franco, which I gather is hard to do, but
just wait till we get to Spider-Man 3.
I'd be happy to see a Madrox movie in any context, so that kind of excites me, and I would recommend people go and read those comics.
It could be a really canny piece of timing by Fox if they have managed to pin him down, because by the time this happens, with the talk that's going on around the disaster artist, could be Academy Award winner James Franco. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. I mean, who would have thought that a Madrox movie had a chance of being a big popular hit? Peter David, maybe. But so anyway, that's Madrox. Shall we do some comics news? Because, I mean, we don't normally cover comics news, but at the same time, there's quite a lot that I feel will have knock-on effects for the TV industry. And also, we hardly ever get to talk about comics anymore because we're always talking about movies. So let's do that for a while.
So yeah, let's jump into two big bits of news that you've probably heard about. But if you haven't, then we'll tell you about them. And if you have, we'll tell you what we think about them.
So this is... it's actually three smaller stories, but they all feed into a similar thing. So... I mean, the big news, I guess, for people like us, is that Brian Bendis has announced that he's leaving Marvel to go to DC.
I mean, this is one of the biggest comics news stories that I can remember for a good long while. I remember seeing it, and I think it was lucky that where I saw it was Bendis's own Twitter retweeting it, because I otherwise wouldn't have believed it. And I'm pretty sure comics websites have been relying on this as an April Fool's joke for years. It's the most like weird shift that you could think of to be an April Fool's joke. Beyond Stan Lee goes to DC in like the 1970s, which I know he did do a Stan Lee at DC, and obviously Jack Kirby went to DC. But it's that kind of level. It's someone who has been so indelibly associated with Marvel for nearly two decades. Like he started on Daredevil before Ultimate Spider-Man, did he? Was Daredevil 99 or was that 2000? Ultimate Spider-Man started in 2000.
Yeah, I think Daredevil was his first thing. Because he came on fairly soon after Kevin Smith. So.
Yeah, so it was around 99, 2000-ish he started working at Marvel. Obviously, he has done his own creator-owned stuff at Image, or which has also been at Icon when he's been Marvel exclusive.
Yeah.
But, you know, apart from a short Batman story a long time ago in an anthology series, his entire superhero career, again, if you don't count Powers as a superhero because it's superhero, but his entire career in superhero comics has been at Marvel. He's done everything there is to do at Marvel, with the exception of the Fantastic Four, and they're not publishing Fantastic Four comics at the moment. But, you know, he's done Spider-Man, he's done X-Men, he's done Avengers, he's done Iron Man. Hasn't done Thor, but I can't imagine him ever being interested in that side of things. He's had his ups and downs, obviously. He's done a lot of stuff that people don't like.
He's been a lot of downs recently.
Yeah, when he does team books, they tend to not be that good, although I did like All New X-Men. His Avengers is not popular. New Avengers was quite good for a bit, because he was writing Luke Cage, and Wolverine, and Spider-Man. But, you know, he's been writing Ultimate Spider-Man and then following through to Miles Morales Spider-Man for all of that time, and it has almost always been excellent. He had a utterly fantastic Daredevil run, which is just phenomenal, that Daredevil run, is responsible for so much of the feel of the Daredevil TV show. But I think as well, Bendis' work feeds so heavily into the MCU movies. And I think
famously,
that
he wrote that first scene with Samuel L. Jackson at the end of Iron Man.
And this is an interesting thing, because he had, and I wonder if this is partly something that's motivated the decision, is that he was really heavily involved in the movies back when the MCU started.
When they had Marvel Comics Brain Trust that James Gunn was so pleased to have been disbanded.
Exactly. That got disbanded because, and I think, was there not kind of conflict with Kevin Feige and the comics side of things?
Definitely.
And so he's not really had any involvement in stuff recently. And then in the meantime, you've got DC who are... Well, I think there's two things that DC could be looked on as a possibility. Firstly, on the movie side of things, they could be crying out for someone to come in and, you know,
give some storytelling
direction.
Yeah.
And secondly, from a publishing point of view, DC are absolutely kicking Marvel's ass at the moment, because DC have had a relaunch that is both creatively, critically, and commercially successful. And they are doing really well at attracting people to come and work for them, as evidenced by the fact that they've somehow managed to get Brian Michael Bendis. What struck me about this is there were no rumours about this. No one even thought, you know, it was not like there was something on Bleeding Cool a while ago saying, oh, Bendis might be going to DC. At least if there was, I didn't see it.
It just came out of nowhere.
It just came out of the blue. It was just Bendis is going to DC, and it's happening really quickly. It's like, so there are only going to be a few more issues of Bendis writing Jessica Jones and a few more issues of Bendis writing Miles Morales. Now, to be fair, the Miles Morales book's been kind of dying on its arse a little bit for a while. It does make it clear that this is why they've now rushed out Spider-Man 2, despite the fact that it has no relevance to anything that's going on at the moment. So Bendis is going to be at DC, and it's, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see where he goes and what he does. A lot of people think he might start out doing something a bit minor. I've heard rumours of a Zatanna book with Sarah Pacelli, which would be amazing. I've also, Al Kennedy suggested on House to Astonish that Bendis would be a really good fit for a Jaime Reyes Blue Beetle series. Which would be nice
to
see.
The other thing that I think is a virtual lock is that Bendis will be writing Action Comics 1000.
Well, yeah, this is the thing. Action Comics and Detective Comics are going to hit issue 1000 soon. And Bendis writing Action Comics when it hits issue 1000 would be a pretty big deal and hard to resist.
Especially, again, I heard this on House of Astonish, but Dan Jurgens is currently writing that book. And he is...
Yeah.
I mean, he's, you know, nothing against him. But he's not.
He's fine.
He's
a steady hand to have on Superman. But you've got
he's the DC version of Peter David, in that he survived the 90s and brings in people who are nostalgic for the 90s.
If you were gonna nudge someone off the two Superman books, I think it would be more likely him than Peter Tomasi over on Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Tomasi and I think Gleason's been co-writing it as well. And also he's doing the Super Sons book that spins out of that. It would make sense to stick him on Action Comics and on Superman.
Yeah.
I also think that Superman is a book that could handle his very Bendis way of writing things. You just picture Bendis writing the Daily Planet. You know, I could really see Bendis writing Clark and Lois with his David Mamet style dialogue.
Yeah, definitely.
Because it's a criticism that gets aimed at Bendis is that his characters don't sound like themselves. They all sound like Brian Michael Bendis writing them. And I think with some writers, that's an annoying thing. I think with Bendis, I find it works more than it doesn't.
I mean, at his best,
right kind of characters.
In something like Daredevil, it's great. It's yeah. when it's team books and you manifestly have like eight different people doing really similar things that aren't in any way like...
Yeah.
When you have a team book, they don't have chemistry because there are too many voices and they're all the same. Mm. Whereas if it's like two-handers, it works a lot better.
Or if it's people in an environment like the Daily Bugle or the Daily Planet,
yeah.
or it's a crime thing,
somewhere where they can be more naturalistic.
I mean, DC doesn't have really so much the real worldishness that he thrives in at Marvel. You could see him writing something set in Gotham, maybe a Renny Montoya question book. It's because I think the thing about Bendis is that he is someone who, he's a bald middle-aged white guy, but I think he writes female characters pretty well, and he's something of a champion of ethnic minority characters as well.
Mm-hmm.
He's created replacements for Spider-Man and Iron Man who are both black, which I think is partly to do with his family circumstance because he has black adopted daughters, but. He's someone who's keen to push superhero comics as not being white and male. And now obviously there's an argument to be made that maybe it should be, female and non-white creators doing it. But I think Bendis has done his part to push that.
Yeah, and I think as a movement, I think it has to come from all directions. And it's no good having a situation where, someone like Riri Williams can only be written by a black woman.
Yeah.
Like it's as good to have the character created and then that creates an opportunity for black women to be attracted to the character as much as anything.
Yeah. So it's really interesting times. And as I say, it's a real boost kind of for DC, ironically given what's going on with the movies, but that their comics are in a pretty decent state at the moment, at least in as much as anybody's comics are at the moment.
I mean, it's weird actually, because this is like Bendis at Marvel was basically the last remaining remnant of that sort of 2000s, early 2000s, like Quesada, Jamas era. Like
he's representative of a couple of different eras, really, because he's representative of that era, which pretty much everyone is long gone.
I would say the four people who typified that era were Bendis, Jamas, Quesada, Bendis, and Miller.
And Miller, yeah. But also then he was one of the Marvel architects in that era, in the sort of, towards the end of the 2000s.
Yeah, after Jamas disappeared.
2010s, yeah. And you had the writers who Marvel called the architects, who were Jonathan Hickman, Matt Fraction, Ed Brubaker, Brian Michael Bendis, and Jason Aaron?
Yep.
Was Jason Aaron one of them?
Yeah, I think so.
Greg Rucker wasn't, was he?
No.
I know Greg Rucker was never really at Marvel, was he?
He every time he's been at Marvel, he's been gone very quickly, as I recall.
Yeah. And yeah, they're all. Jason Aaron is still around, but he's going to be the only one when Bendis goes.
Yeah.
And it is interesting as well that obviously not only do Marvel not have that group of writers, but
I mean they don't. They haven't had a group come up to replace them, have they?
Yeah, they don't have big names really. Like I say, a lot is going to fall on Aaron's shoulders. Jeff Lemire is also leaving Marvel. He was someone who'd been given some of that responsibility, but. I like Jeff Lemire, but I've never really read a Marvel book from him that I liked.
No, I mean, they have the thing, don't they, of like, you look at who the good new talent is, and it's all at DC. Like, I can't believe they let Tom King slip through their fingers.
I mean, that is a big loss to Marvel, is the fact that they don't have someone Tom King there.
This is actually one of the things that I think feeds into our next piece of news, which we should probably get to. So... Shortly after Bendis was announced as leaving Marvel for DC, Axel Alonso, the editor-in-chief of Marvel, was fired.
Or left by mutual consent.
Yeah. Was replaced by C.B. Sobolski, who... I mean, it's strange, because he's not been a big editor at Marvel for a long... He was never a big editor at Marvel.
Never a big editor anyway.
Yeah, he wasn't like your Tom. Like when Quesada left, Tom Brevoort and Alex Alonso were like co-head of Marvel editorial for a while until it fell on Alonso.
I'm surprised that Tom Breville didn't get this job. I mean, actually, you would have thought he would have been the one.
Well, this is the thing, because when Cebulski was announced, you said to me, is this because of how important he is to Disney? And I think that is absolutely why he's got this job, because he's someone who has a foot in the Marvel and Disney camps. Like, he was the sort of main Marvel liaison to basically the whole of the, like, Eastern Hemisphere. Like, he was, as far as I know, he spent the last year in China expecting to stay there as Marvel's, like, talent acquisition arm in China.
And that's, those words, talent acquisition, I mean, that's what he was known for in the US before he went off to move upwards at Disney, was he was quite renowned as being the guy who you would go to at conventions for your portfolio review, and was very, as far as I gather, was very well regarded in terms of fostering talent, both in terms of being able to find it and also being someone who people really like to work with. Like, he's someone who I've never seen anyone in the industry have a bad word to say about him.
Nope. And I mean,
and I think,
like, he's done his own comics and he's edited comics and they've all been fine.
Yeah.
But people love him.
I think that's the thing. It's less of a creative decision and more of a decision of who can, someone who can bring in creative.
Yeah.
Because that's what Marvel need. Yeah. Nothing emphasizes it more than the Bendis departure. But it's clearly something that Axel Alonso was having trouble with. I mean, there were a lot of things that Axel Alonso was having trouble with. And Axel Alonso, you know, Axel Alonso worked at Vertigo, not when Vertigo were quite at their absolute peak, but, you know, they were still Vertigo, and he still edited some really good comics. So it's not that he didn't have the credentials, and he'd done good work at Marvel lower down, but I don't think anyone could argue that in the top job he's been a success.
Yeah, I mean,
and I think he's alienated some readers, and and what's ironic actually is, like, I kind of went off Axel Alonso because I saw him making some comments along the lines of, you know, not wanting, I don't think he necessarily used the phrase SJW, although he might have done, but that he didn't want Marvel, you know, he was hedging his bets basically, because he was obviously trying not to annoy the anti-SJW brigade. But in doing so, he annoyed people like me who don't want to give that anti-PC voice, you know, any air. At the same time, if you look at what the reaction among the people who hate SJWs has been to Alonso's departure, they're all delighted because they think in the last few years, Marvel has been overly SJW-ified and that Alonso is the symbol of that. And it's like, no, he was trying to pull back from it. And also, some of them don't seem to know who C.B. Cebulski is, because they seem to think, because again, they hate this whole, I'm not going to go into it, but, like, if you look up Milkshake Marvel and that whole thing, you know, they hate this thing of, like, young female creators and editors coming into Marvel. And they seem to think that C.B. Cebulski will move them away from that. But if that's the case, I've got news for them, because that's exactly the kind of creators that,
he'll bring in more of. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, being editor-in-chief of Marvel is always a difficult position, because I think in the company's entire history, only two people have ever been promoted out of that job. And one was Stan Lee, and the other was Joe Quesada. And Axel Alonso was no Joe Quesada.
No.
Personally, I would have liked to have seen him gone a couple of years ago. I think basically, I could point to a number of things and say, like, he screwed it up here. But I think after Secret Wars would have been a good time to go, well, that didn't work. I mean, Ultimatum was probably the first time I was like, actually, this guy doesn't know what he's doing, because they're in perpetual reboot mode.
Yeah.
So Ultimatum would have been the first time where I started thinking, like, he's lost it. After Secret Wars didn't really catch fire. Like, Secret Wars itself was a great event, but the comics that came after were, and during, were incredibly confusing. And the relaunch stuff didn't last very long at all. And then Marvel Legacy has been an absolute shit show. So I can understand why someone would have looked at the, you know, looked at the way DC has been performing recently, looked at Marvel's comparison to it over the last two or three years, and then seen Bendis leaving and gone, okay, we've had enough of you. You did all that and you let Tom King go. You clearly don't know your job anymore.
Yeah.
Like, the reason he kind of has to be replaced at this point is that basically since I've been reading comics, Marvel has been like the top dog in the industry. Like, there are maybe a couple of months where DC maybe pulled ahead in terms of unit share or dollar share, but generally, for pretty much the last 25 years, Marvel has been, in one way or another, out in front. Like, creatively, financially, popularly.
Mm.
And that's, in the last maybe 3 or 4 years, that's flipped around. So, at this
and
point...
And certainly in the last year, year and a half.
More strongly, I think maybe they were kind of level for a bit, and now DC is unquestionably on the cutting edge. So... Yeah, it's well past time for Axel Alonso to leave his job, I think.
Yeah.
And I think Sapolsky is as good a choice as any. Like, I think Tom Brevoort has his place at Marvel, but I'm not sure it was ever going to be in charge. And certainly, if I was Disney, I wouldn't be promoting someone internally.
I think the thing with Brevoort is it would not have felt like as much of a statement as well, because he's of this era of Marvel.
Well,
I mean, he's off many eras of Marvel.
I was going to say, he's been around since the 90s.
But I mean, in terms of, you know, he's almost too obvious a choice, and this feels like a hire that has been done to deliberately make people go, oh, okay, Marvel are maybe changing direction a little bit.
Yeah, indeed.
And Brevoort wouldn't have been that, because he's such a company man.
I mean, what I really hope for is a kind of what happened when Joe Quesada came in, which was basically a year and a half of him looking at every line of Marvel comics and going, okay, I'm gonna cancel everything and come up with something new and exciting.
Yeah.
So, frankly, the sooner the original five X-Men get sent back to the past, the better. Because even I, as a hardcore X-Men fan, I'm getting bored to shit of this stuff.
Yeah, so interesting times at both Marvel and DC. But yeah, I think DC can probably have a bit of confidence that they're getting the big A-list headline stuff, and Marvel need to be the risk-taking underdog, at least in comics terms.
Mm-hmm.
In movie terms, it's almost the exact opposite. The DC movies need to take some interesting risks. But, yeah.
I mean, I think they took a real risk with Justice League. It was probably just wasn't interesting.
Yeah, they didn't see it as one. They thought it was a home run. So, yeah, that's a longer than expected run through some recent comic book movie and comics news. So we'll be back with another episode, hopefully in about a week or so's time. Depends how quickly we record and edit it. We're going to be doing the Disney superhero film Sky High, which is good news for me because I just signed up for Disney Life, so I can watch it on there. It is on there.
I'm quite excited because they added Gargoyles to Disney Life recently, so I'm going to rewatch that.
You're going to cover it on the podcast? Does it count? Is it based on a comic?
They did a Gargoyles comic, but it was really bad.
Okay, but it was the other way. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Although there's one issue of the 90s Gargoyles comic that's drawn by Amanda Connor.
Wow.
Yeah, it's good.
It's a bit like the way there's that Ren and Stimpy comic that was written by Dan Slott.
Which I own.
Yeah, and you bought me a comic.
Oh yeah, of course, yeah.
So we'll be back with Sky High. Maybe not before the end of this month, but I think in early December. We are trying to get back on a more regular.
I think we're scheduled to record it in December the 2nd, so.
Yeah. We keep scheduling things and then it slips a bit, but I think we're gonna get ourselves through to Christmas. We're going to get Sky High. We're going to have our awards. And then in the new year, we'll be able to get back onto a cleaner schedule. We've got some pretty big ones coming up at the start of the year.
We're going to do Dark Knight.
Don't spoil it. I've also got a suggestion for what to do after that, but I haven't talked about it with you guys yet. So,
okay.
So that'll remain a mystery. But also, in the meantime, another bit of pod-related news is that, I mean, you're obviously listening to this already, so you're one of the people who actually still listens to it or listens to it by normal ways, but we are now on Spotify. You might even be listening to us on Spotify. But if you're not, but you have Spotify, if you go and listen to us on Spotify as well, you could even just leave it playing through a load of the episodes. that'll really help boost. If we get some popularity on Spotify, that'll help boost us overall, and hopefully it'll help us to stay on there. Because I'm not entirely certain why we got invited by Libsyn to go on there. Maybe they invited everybody now, I don't know. But we are on there, so that should be a nice boost for people to find us and listen to us. Do we have any Patreon news, James?
I guess no,
we
Patreon
covered this on the last
week,
main
no.
episode. James, you have now recorded your bonus episode.
Yes,
I
will. I'm planning to edit it. It may even be out by the time you're hearing it.
Yeah, ranking the MCU. So that's a Patreon exclusive as a thank you for Patreon backers. James is good, has ranked every Marvel Cinematic Universe film. Have you done the TV shows?
I mean, I considered it, but I think that's maybe a separate
okay.
podcast.
And I'll be doing one because we've also hit that target, explaining every DC reboot. So I've got some notes to make before I try and sit down and talk through that one. I'm not going to do that one off the top of my head. So that's all still ticking over nicely. So thanks to everyone who backs us on there. I did this on the last episode, but since we're here, I want to throw in a plug for my new Office US episode by episode podcast. It's called The People Persons Paper People, and it's at peoplepersonspaperpeople.podbean.com or p4_podcast on Twitter. I've done 3 episodes so far, the most recent one being healthcare from the first season. I'll be doing the 4th one probably next week, so it'll be out early December. So listen to that if you like the US Office.
James Roberts, the writer of Transformers Lost Light, is a big fan.
Yes, he is. I was very pleased by his endorsement. In turn, you should read his Transformers comics because they're awesome. But we've talked about that in a great length on this podcast before. You can, as per usual, you can find more episodes of this show at cinematicuniverse.com. We will do more with the website at some point soon, honest. We've just been really busy, but we'll get some more stuff on there. You can get in touch with us on Facebook, on Twitter, @cine_verse, or you can send us an email to editorial@cinematicuniverse.com.
Does anyone ever do that?
Yes, we do get emails and we do read them. Joe reads them and I sometimes read them. And we do read all comments on Twitter as well. They help to feed and sometimes bash our egos, so keep those ones up. So as I say, it'll be, unless another minisode of some kind gets squeezed in before then, because Joe has got a lot of comics to catch up on, the next you'll hear from any of us will probably be all 3 of us doing Sky High. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you for that hopefully next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.